You're listening to Inland Edition on 91.9 KVCR. I'm Lillian Vasquez. Our guest is Marcia Johnson. She is with Inland Counties Legal Services, which is a nonprofit that specializes in legal aid. And today we're going to talk about IEPs and how they relate to families, education, and such. So let's begin with, what is an IEP and who is eligible?
An IEP stands for Individualized Education Plan. So it's intended to be a unique individualized plan for a child who is in special education and needs special education supports, services, and possibly placement. So the plan itself is supposed to detail exactly what categories the child qualifies for special education under, how that affects that child's ability to learn and access the curriculum, and what types of supports and services and therapies and accommodations they need to be able to put them on a more level playing field so that they can get a quality education just like their peers. The district has a responsibility to place the student in the least restrictive environment that's appropriate. So for some, they don't necessarily need to be in a special education classroom or a special day class. They can thrive in the general education setting, but perhaps they just need additional support so that they can access the curriculum, get the additional help that they need in specific topics. You could have a child maybe in high school who, you know, is in general education for, you know, 5 out of their 6 classes, and then they're in one class that's a special education class, or maybe they're in general education all day, but they have speech and language therapy or some other type of therapy to help support their needs.
Now, do all individuals qualify for an IEP, or do you have to make the case for someone to qualify for an IEP?
That's a great question. So it's interesting because the district does have a responsibility called Child Find, and they have a responsibility to identify children who may qualify for an IEP. But that doesn't mean that parents, caretakers, whoever it may be that recognizes that their child may need some additional help, can't request an assessment. And that's really where the process starts. Doing a comprehensive look at what the child's needs are, where their strengths are, where their weaknesses lie. And then from there, there is a determination as to whether or not all of those things combined equal eligibility for an IEP.
Okay, so now let's focus specifically on that middle school, high school student. When students reach a certain age, it's time to think about a transition plan as students prepare to leave high school and transition into adult life. How does a parent request this service?
Like an IEP, the district has certain responsibilities when it comes to transition planning. So really, it's on the district to initiate this process. But again, I like parents to feel empowered to know what their rights are, what their students should be getting, and so that they can make these requests in the case that the district maybe is not moving as quickly as they should. Transition planning starts with an individual transition plan, an ITP, which essentially is a component of the IEP. So when a student is turning 16, that should be included in their overall IEP to really address what their next steps are, what their goals are, and then create an actual actionable plan as to how they're going to help the student get there, all with the goal of getting them ready to transition out of high school and into whatever their next stage in life may be, whether it's college, trade school, or something else.
All right. Let me reintroduce our guest is Marcia Johnson. She is with Inland Counties Legal Services. She's actually the Practice Group Director of Public Benefits and Education. And we're talking about IEPs and its process. Now, they're in high school. You've just suggested that 16 is the age that we should be thinking about it. What should a transition plan look like? And I'm sure they're all going to look very different, but give me a general idea of what a transition plan should look like.
Sure. And I do want to actually qualify that a little bit, because though it's required to be in a child's plan by the age 16, they can start sooner. And in some cases, it's more appropriate to start sooner. If a child may need more years to be able to prepare for transition, then that's absolutely something that parents want to take into consideration. When a child turns 16 and the requirement kicks in, their plan should really take into consideration their wants, their needs, their goals. So it should start with an idea as to what that specific child actually wants for him or herself. So whether it be, you know, the child wants to be a nurse, or the child, you know, doesn't want to go to college, maybe wants to get in some type of certificate program or whatever it may be. It could even be so much as I want to move out and get an apartment with roommates, right? And then from those larger goals, you start to create these smaller benchmarks that are attainable, where you can say, okay, this is what you need to do to get to that ultimate goal. Let's pace this out over the remainder of time you have in school. Let's pinpoint who is going to help you with what. So whether this is something your parents are going to do, this is something you're going to be responsible for, this is something your teachers are going to help you with, et cetera. So there should be this kind of overarching goal and then all of these smaller points that help you get to that ultimate goal.
All right. You just described wants, needs, and goals. Now, let's say you have a student that college isn't going to be his or her way of life, and maybe it's not trade school. What should they be thinking about? And what if that student is nonverbal or not able to communicate, but still has abilities? How do parents plan for that student's ITP?
You know, further education is not necessarily the goal for everybody, right? And special education or not. So it can really be a wide range of goals. Like, it could be as simple as saying, I want to, you know, get my driver's license. It could be as broad as I want to be independent, and then boiling down what independence looks like for that particular student, given all of their strengths, weaknesses, limitations, everything combined. For a student who is nonverbal, I tend to find that there's usually some way of them expressing themselves, whether it's through some type of assistive technology that helps them communicate, whether it's through having aides and parents who know them very well and understand certain gestures or certain behaviors or indicating something of that nature. It just depends. But ultimately, it really should be formulated around that student, and that term individualized, that should be the underlying point that everybody keeps in mind. This is really supposed to be tailored for this person. So it doesn't have to be along the lines of, well, you're in high school, so naturally you're going to go to college.
Right.
It's what works for that person.
So when I'm envisioning a transition plan, let's say the student is a 16, technically a sophomore, junior, somewhere in there, physically in high school. What could a plan look like in the classroom? Would it be where they're learning to count change? Would it be they're learning to fold clothes so they could work at Kohl's? What would it look like in the classroom? I'm sure in your years of practice, you've seen a variety of ideas that have been implemented in the classroom to help better suit that student when he or she exits out of high school. Do you have ideas or thoughts there?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, actually. And I think it's really a matter of getting creative. I think there's more resources available than we sometimes think of or are aware of. But really, it could even expand outside of their everyday class. It could be an internship with an agency having to do with whatever that student's goals are, right? It could be some type of hands-on practicum in some way where they're actually able to see what that job looks like and whether or not, you know, now that they have a better idea, whether or not that would be suitable for them. So really, an ITP, I think it'll a lot of times it should help take the student outside of the classroom and kind of bring them into the larger world so that they are getting a sense of what their goals and hopes are. And then also for students who just don't know and who aren't sure, it gives them the ability to start imagining and to start thinking about the possibilities that are there, so then they can formulate goals for themselves.
So I kind of hear you saying teachers, administrators, and parents need to be creative in what they're coming up with. It not one size fits all, and we have to think outside the box when planning it. And as you also indicated, our regular ed students have to do the same thing. They don't know always what they're going to do, and we have to kind of figure it out in those years.
Absolutely. I wish that at the high school level, I had myself even had more exposure to internships and kind of doing things in the real world. I didn't find those experiences until college or even later than that. And I think it's the best way for people to learn and to figure out what they really want to do.
And let's face it, how can we possibly know? I mean, some of us do. There are some that know what they want to do from the time they were five. But when you're in high school, you're still trying to figure it out, and testing things is a great opportunity. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Marsha Johnson. She is with the Inland Counties Legal Services. We'll continue talking about IEPs, ITPs when we come back. You're listening to Inland Edition on KVCR. I'm Lillian Vasquez. Stay with us. Just joining us, our guest is Marsha Johnson. She is with Inland Counties Legal Services, which is a nonprofit that specializes in legal aid. She is the Practice Group Director of Public Benefits / Education. Before the break, we were talking about IEPs, and then you said ITPs, which is the T is standing for transition, individual transition plan. How can parents and their child best prepare themselves for ITPs? What kind of checklist or goals are there that you think would be really helpful when they're thinking about this?
That's a good question. And it's interesting because it seems so simple, but honestly, I think the best way to plan is a conversation or maybe even journaling with the student and starting kind of with the larger picture and getting a sense of that student in a holistic way. So what are their likes and dislikes? What are they good at? What interests do they have? Who's their support system and who are they going to continue to have as a support system when they graduate from high school? What are their financial means, like the realistic things as well, and really kind of getting an overall sense of what that student wants to do. And if they don't have a specific job in mind or ultimate goal, just getting a sense of altogether what it is they like, what suits them best, and then creating a plan from there with the help of teachers and the remainder of the IEP and ITP team.
You know, before the break, we were talking about, or I was mentioning that I think people have to get creative. I once did a story on special ed and employment, and I went to a school in Riverside. And the teacher there and the program there was set up like a store where all students or anyone could come and buy something, but those with special needs were running the store. So they were learning how to stock, they were learning how to register, how to give change, how to do all those things. And I just thought it was a great example. And I know most schools don't do this, but I thought they were really being creative and really giving that student some hands-on experience that many don't get. Do you see or do you hear of other programs that, have been more creative and thought outside the box?
I have heard of some programs similar to what you mentioned, and I think those are great as well. I've heard of, in the regional center scope, I've heard of some programs where individuals are working with perhaps the Salvation Army or something of that nature, and they're able to kind of develop a certain skill set. And then at times they can even earn a small income from doing so and devoting hours to doing that type of work for whatever agency is in need of help. I think those are great programs because they're hands-on. And, everybody has a different level of ability. And for some students with IEPs and in special education, they very much may be college-bound. Others, maybe not so much, right? But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be given an opportunity to live as independently as possible and is appropriate for them. So I think having those types of programs are excellent. They teach them real necessary skills that they can apply in everyday life, whether it be in work or in a trade or just even knowledge that they really need for themselves as adults in the world.
All right. I want to switch gears now a little bit and talk more legality and laws. And I know looking at the IDEA regulations and the California Education Codes that parents do have legal rights for their student, and sometimes it might be difficult for the parent to get the school district or someone within that district to support that. That doesn't mean the district is ill will or not intending to do it. But overwhelmingly, there's a lot of students, right? Because let's face it, one parent cares about their kid the most. They don't care about, I mean, that's not to say they don't care about the others, but their focus is their child and they want the best for that child. And I always feel like the more educated you are on the law and what California says they'll provide, that if the parent knows some of those restrictions or the laws, that they, you know, knowledge is power, right?
100%. I've seen even, you know, in my own family, my sister-in-law advocating for my nieces and nephews and their needs. And the more she learns, even sometimes just key terms, key words, the more empowered she is. Both, you know, personally, she feels empowered. She feels confident enough to go and ask for what her kids need, but she's also able to have a better conversation with the school, have a better meeting with the school, and really get to the point of things and make sure that her kids are getting what they need, because she understands that she has rights and that there are laws that support this. It's not just what somebody tells you in a meeting that they can or can't do. It's whether or not what they're telling you is based on the actual law. So I'm a huge believer in informing parents and families and caregivers and agencies who work with foster youth and so on and so forth, because those individuals are going to be the biggest advocates for students. And those advocates tend to be in students' lives far longer than an attorney may be. They need to understand what their students deserve so that they can make sure that the districts comply with that.
Now, I'm certain there may be one or two parents that have that live this world and understand the IEP process and the ITP process. What can parents do when things stall? Again, districts have so many students that they're tending for, especially now during this time period, the last 2 years that we've been living through. What can parents do when it stalls and they're trying to get something done and maybe the meetings aren't coming together as quickly as possible? What rights do they have?
Well, as far as resources, I will say that our agency is one. So parents are more than welcome to contact us to seek assistance, depending on whatever the situation is, and we would be more than happy to evaluate and see what type of help we could provide. But generally, I will say that I think one of the biggest things parents don't know is that they have a right to request an IEP meeting at any point. So IEP meetings are, by law, have to be held at least yearly, annually. And then triennially, every 3 years, they also go through a new batch of assessments to kind of check on, you know, where the student is and then make sure that the goals and everything continue to be appropriate and whatever changes need to happen, happen. But outside of that annual requirement, parents can request an IEP every single month if they want to. I'm not necessarily recommending that, right? It does put quite a burden on the school district. But if a parent feels as though their child is not getting what they're supposed to, or maybe their needs have changed and therefore their supports and services need to change, they absolutely should request an IEP meeting.
From a parent's perspective and being reasonable, you make a request, you can allow 3 days, 2 weeks, a month. What's a fair time before it should be scheduled and happened?
I would say about 30 days is reasonable. Okay. They have to take into consideration how many people they have to gather with different schedules.
Right.
But I don't think more than 30 days is really necessary in most cases.
Marsha, what is your greatest takeaway? As our listeners are hearing this topic, and if it's applying to them, they're much more invested in it. What do you feel is the greatest takeaway you want parents or you want educators or administrators to know?
I think an IEP meeting is so incredibly valuable, and I think that if parents and educators and the district and everybody are really willing to come together and listen to each other and work together, so much can be accomplished through those meetings. It doesn't have to result in going to due process or having to escalate complaints. It really can be resolved at the IEP level. And I think sometimes parents are disheartened because of situations that they've been in or experiences they've had with the school and don't think IEPs do anything. They think they're just kind of a requirement and they really think that they should be skipped over. But I want them to have hope in that system, because with the right team and with caring teachers and educators and school districts and things of that nature, you really can accomplish a lot. You really can get what your student needs by coming together and sitting around a table at an IEP meeting and then writing that into a formal document. And I think that that's really important for parents to know. And I would hope that more of them are successful through that process rather than having to escalate things to a higher level.
Which always makes it nice when we can settle at the lower level and not have to get into the legalese and not have to deal with you guys, right?
Absolutely. I tell people, you know, attorneys are here to help, right? And we'll get involved when we need to get involved. But I always remind parents that they're going to have that ongoing relationship with the district for years to come.
Right.
And your lawyer is only going to be there for a time, right? And you and the student, they're still going to be there. They're going to be going through this process for however many years. And it's important to maintain those types of relationships.
I think if the focus stays on the student and the best outcome from the student, all can work. And because really, that's the bottom line. We want the best for that student when they exit out of high school to go on to their adult life.
Exactly. And that's why transition planning is so important. Even, you know, students who don't have special needs and aren't in special education, they could benefit from transition planning, right? Like, who knows what the world holds
right. When
you're 16.
Right.
So just imagine somebody who does have special needs and needs a little bit more support and help and time to plan. It's critical.
All right, real good. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate learning more and hearing about this. And hopefully others are listening to see how it might benefit them if they're living in this IEP, ITP world. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Marcia Johnson is the Practice Group Director for Public Benefits and Education with the nonprofit Inland Counties Legal Services. Find information on today's topic and other services on their website at inlandlegal.org. That's inlandlegal.org. We'll include the web link with this episode on our program page. Join us again next week for Inland Edition, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. and 6:30, right here on 91.9 KVCR. To hear this episode and past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/Inland Edition. You can also listen to Inland Edition on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, or search for Inland Edition on your favorite streaming service. Inland Edition is a production of KVCR News. Support for this production, including writing and editing, comes from Sharina Wad, Rick Dulock, and David Fleming. And we get technical website and social media support from Tim Steidel, Sean Houlihan, and Natasha Coles. I'm your host, Lillian Vasquez. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.